And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olives, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your congregation. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Inheritance, by Harriet Kopp, is one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationship between man and man. It was hundreds of years ago that Judah HaNasi, the learned scholar, said,
I learned much from my teachers, more from my colleagues, and most from my pupils.
This was true hundreds of years ago. It is true today. Although, as a matter of fact, in my entire life, I have had only one pupil, and that one many years ago when I was still a young law student. But the lessons of youth are not easily forgotten. And now I look back with a chuckle and a twinge to the east side of New York at the turn of the century when... I watched him come limping to the stoop of my tenement, an insignificant, drab young man, the only brightness about him the sparkle of the gas lamp bouncing off his pince-nez glasses. His only mark of distinction, the umbrella he carried on this radiantly clear summer evening. I watched him as he stood indecisively for a moment, then tapped the umbrella hesitantly against the door.
I hope I have not disturbed you. Permit me to introduce myself. Sigmund Grosenheimer.
I'm afraid I don't recall having met you.
It's no wonder. You have never before had the pleasure.
Then to what do I owe it now?
To a proposition I should like to discuss with you.
My good man, propositions are either for manipulators or suckers. I am not being overly modest when I say no one has ever considered me a sucker. On the other hand, a manipulator requires a fortune to manipulate, and unfortunately, mine is yet to be made. So, would you be good enough to remove your umbrella from the door and to take your proposition elsewhere, Mr.
Grosenheimer. German, you know. Gross meaning great and Heim meaning home. Great home. We had a big place in Germany. One of the leading families of Hanover I come from. A long line of mayors, rabbis, lawyers, merchants, doctors, scholars.
Fascinating genealogy, but would you excuse me? You interrupted me in the middle of shaving, and within the next 30 minutes I must report to work. A clean-shaven credit for the night shift of the United States Postal System.
Ah. Mr. Kaufman, how you handle the English language. Nobody listening to you could believe you're in this country only so long as me. And such a marvel. Already a post office clerk.
How did you know my name?
Your name? Herman Kaufman. Your mother is Sarah. Your father is Joseph. Their address, 64 Ludlow Street. You see, I know your sister Jenny from the cigarette factory where we both work. And it was something she said that gave me the idea.
Sigmund Grosenheimer, watch how you're stacking those cigarettes. Four times Mr. Leffert's, the foreman, has been over here checking your work. Here, give them to me. Let me pack for you while Mr. Leffert has his back turned.
Jenny, I don't know what I would do if you weren't next to me. The way you make a cigarette, it's a joy to look at, let alone smoke. With mine, the tobacco shreds and hangs out the ends like spaghetti. The wrapper gets dirty, the packs get untied. Jenny, if you didn't help me out, Mr. Lefferts would have fired me weeks ago.
Don't feel bad, Sigmund. Maybe cigarette making isn't for you. Being able to roll a cigarette isn't the only way to earn a living.
I know. That's what they told me at Schwartz and Gessler when they let me go as a pants presser. My uncle said the same thing when he tried to make me a fur cutter.
I've got it, Sigmund. Suddenly it's all clear. Everything you've tried so far has been a trade with your hands. Mm-hmm. It's obvious you're not a craftsman. But don't you see? It's the wrong field entirely for you. With your background, coming from a family like the Grossenheimers, you should be working with the mind.
Jenny, you think so?
Unquestionably and undoubtedly. Shh! Mr. Evans is coming for the checkup. We'll talk later.
So you see, Mr. Coppin, it was really Jenny's idea. She felt that with your intellect and your experience, maybe you could teach me enough to pass the civil service test for post office clerk. But maybe you could give me some lessons, for which, naturally, I would pay an agreed-upon fee. I would expect no guarantee from you. I promise you I will study and do whatever you say. Can you imagine me, a post office clerk, a white-collar worker with a civil service job from which nobody could fire me? Oh, I'd be a real credit to the name of Grossenheimer. What do you say, Mr. Coppin?
What could I say? I wanted to say, why doesn't Jenny keep her mouth plugged up with tobacco while she works? I also wanted to say, little man, I have all I can do to cram for my courses at law school without taking on my sister's schlemiels. What did I say?
Tomorrow at 5. Oh, thanks, Mr. Coppin. I'll be here promptly. You'll never regret the decision. I'll make you proud of me.
So we started. Every evening at 5, promptly, appeared my little man of distinction, Sigmund Grossenheimer of the famous line of Grossenheimers. Doctors, scholars, rabbis, notwithstanding, the going was rough.
You said state capitals, Mr. Coppin, so here goes. Washington, Olympia. Louisiana, Baton Rouge. Georgia. Could you maybe give me a hint like the first letter, perhaps?
So we'd start again.
Georgia, Atlanta. Stupid, I didn't know that before. Louisiana, Baton Rouge. Washington, now that one slips me.
Summer had passed, and Sigmund Grossenheimer's umbrella no longer set him apart. November rains made him anonymous as he came down the street, surrounded by dozens of raised umbrellas.
5:50. I know it, Mr. Coppin. I know it fine. I practiced with Jenny. First, we put the cigarettes in pairs and threes. We're up to stacking them in 7 now. We keeping at it until I know the 7th table perfect. Mr. Leffert, the foreman, wasn't so pleased.
All right, Sigmund. Here's another pack of 7. So now it's 6 packs. Of 7.
Mm.
How many cigarettes have we got?
Jenny, I know. It's coming along fine now. 42. 6 sevens are 42.
I'm taking 1 pack away now.
Yeah.
So what have we got, Sigmund?
Oh, that makes it 7 fives, which gives us 35.
Gross.
The name is not Gross, but Grossenheimer. Such a name rolls off the tongue. The other, Gross, spits off. Mr. Leffert, you are the foreman. I am the worker. I grant you the right when addressing me to cut out the mister, but not to cut off even one from the syllables of Grossenheimer.
Now you seem to be the teacher instead of the pupil, which brings me right back to the arithmetic class I seem to be interrupting.
Arithmetic, Mr. Leffert? Mr. Grossenheimer and I were working on a possible new method of stacking the cigarettes. 7 was working out very well for counting piecework.
When piecework counts up to 42 cigarettes for a whole hour's work, better leave the planning to the management and stack in the usual tents.
So, Mr. Coppin, you'll find me strong on 7s and 10s today. Jenny figured out the way we're going to work our nines tomorrow by sneaking one out of the cigarette bundle. That'll be getting us into subtraction, too, at the same time, Jenny says. She's an unusual girl, that sister Jenny of yours.
I was beginning to think so myself. So one day I took my sister Jenny out for a walk. You're probably surprised that I've asked you to come out for a walk with me, Jenny.
Why should I be? Maybe you like the feel of slush inside your galoshes.
I didn't even notice that it was snowing. It was the only way I could think of to get to talk to you alone.
That you should want to talk to me alone? Imagine that the day would come that you'd invite your kid sister to tag along. I feel warm all over, right down to my soaking wet toes.
Oh, now, Jenny, don't be angry. Look, you guessed it was about Sigmund Grossenheimer I wanted to talk, didn't you? Jenny, he's not for you. You're smart and quick. He's dull and slow. What do you see in him, Jenny?
Oh, I don't know. Well, where you see dullness, maybe I see goodness. Where you see slowness, I see, patience and courage. Perhaps it's because I don't see the little man that you see, but rather the last of the Grossenheimers, the way he sees himself. A man with a big name, a heritage, and a responsibility.
How could I let Jenny down? So back I went to help Sigmund make good on his responsibility to the Grossenheimers. And mine to Jenny.
9, 3, 27, 9, 4, 36, 9, 5, 45, 9, 6, 54, 9, 7, 63.
And 7, 9, Sigmund?
Oh, I have to have a little time. That's a hard one.
I was ready to give up, but I thought of Jenny and how she had said,
where you see dullness, maybe I see goodness.
So, on we went. Tables became number perfect.
9, 12, 108. 10, 12, 120. 11, 12, 172.
The birds singing through the open windows, children chanting doggerels as they bounce their balls, jump their ropes. Peddlers hawking pickles, pretzels, all the street noises of the Lower East Side of New York couldn't turn Sigmund from his appointed rounds. Now, here's another kind of question you'll get on the test, Sigmund.
Mm-hmm.
Dancing is to the feet mm-hmm. as painting is to the hands. You get it?
Yeah. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Now you try this one.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing is to the ear as smelling is to
the nose.
Fine. Now, just one more to clinch it.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeing is to the eyes, as reasoning is to the
thumb.
The night before the civil service exams, Sigmund came to see me.
Mr. Coppin?
Yes, Sigmund.
I don't know exactly how to say this. But I'll be grateful to you for the rest of my life. I know I'll never be smart like you, and maybe it sounds nervy coming from someone like me talking to a brain like you, Mr. Coppin, but I gotta say it. If there's ever a time I can do anything for you, anything you ever need, I promise you I'll help you.
The lists came out a few weeks later. Jenny was in my room for the celebration. Breathlessly, Sigmund ran in with the paper.
Hurry, Sigmund, give it to me. I want to be the first to see it in print. It was my idea in the first place, wasn't it?
No, Jenny, better Mr. Coppin. It was all his hard work with me night after night for all these months.
Well, let me have it. Let's see now. Brown, Cannes, Cross, Gumbitz, Englander, French. Ah, here the G's. Gaines, Goldman, Gould, Grossman...
Oh, keep going.
Sigmund should have been there already. between Gould and Grossman should come Grossenheimer.
Maybe an error. Mr. Kappen, look all around there on the G's. Grossenheimer, such a long name. Maybe they thought it better to put it at the end of the list.
Sigmund, I'm afraid that there's no Grossenheimer anywhere. Not at the beginning, the middle, or the end of the list.
Would 5 o'clock be convenient for you evenings this year too, Mr. Kappen? That is, Jenny, if you're still willing to help me pack and stack my cigarettes and Mr. Lifford isn't looking.
And I remember Jenny saying...
Where you see slowness, maybe I see patience and courage.
Months passed, and only an alert observer would have noticed any change in the lessons. But we were moving faster and deeper, getting into the complexities of problem solving. Now, Sigmund, if a herring and a half costs a penny and a half, how much would one herring cost?
The whole problem is ridiculous on its very face, Herman. Whoever sells a herring and a half? You go into a store, you buy one herring, two herrings, three, depending on your needs, but never do you buy a herring in sections. Chickens, that's different. Maybe you're expecting an extra for supper, but you're not absolutely certain he's coming, so you don't want to go overboard and buy two chickens. So you buy one and a half in case.
I see your point. All right, make it a chicken and a half.
Yeah. Now, there's no point in solving it. It's unrealistic. Where could you buy a chicken and a half for a penny and a half?
This time, after the new civil service list came out, we didn't buy any wine ahead of time. Jenny and I figured we'd work out the details of the celebration after we saw the name Grossenheimer in print. But again, he didn't pass. Quite frankly, if not for my sister Jenny and the added income those lessons gave me, I'd have given up Sigmund Grossenheimer as a post office clerk as a lost cause. His faith, though, was untarnished.
Jenny, today is payday.
I know. I've got the bank book. Certainly is a slow business to save up $500 so that we can get married.
Jenny, there are more important things than money. Listen to me. When the results of the new tests I just took come out, you must go out shopping immediately. First, to buy me some shirts with collars. And second, to make a down payment on a piano. Now that we are entering the white-collar class, we must pay attention to getting culture. A piano has always been a necessity, not a luxury, in the home of a Grossenheimer.
I left him and his dreams to Jenny. She loved him so much, she still had hopes.
May I hear middle C on that light mahogany once again? I'm not sure I like the tone of the one as well as the dark one.
Jenny went shopping around for pianos, in case Sigmund passed his exam. And Sigmund? Sigmund practiced rolling cigarettes, just in case Mr. Lefferts might have him around for another year.
Yes, Mr. Lefferts, I have it now. Roll them tighter and wet from left to right.
Gross.
Grossenheimer, Mr. Lefferts.
Part of a name missing. This bothers you, huh? Look at this. Part of the cigarette missing. One, the middle empty. This doesn't bother you, eh, Gross?
Sigmund, the list is out.
Excuse me, please, Mr. Lefferts, a minute. Am I on it? Jenny, did I pass?
Look for yourself. Sigmund Grossenheimer. There it is in its full glory between Green and Gunfield.
That's all I wanted to know. Mr. Lefferts, I am hereby notifying you of the resignation of Mr. Sigmund Grossenheimer. Goodbye, Lefferts. Or should I say Lef?
This was the start of a new life for Sigmund. Such riches. A new position, a new piano, and Jenny, his beautiful bride. Each morning, Sigmund put on his white shirt and a clean, starched white collar, kissed Jenny goodbye, marched himself to the Avenue C post office, where he immediately and completely forgot every capital city and every multiplication table he had learned and became one of the most efficient clerks in the entire post office.
And today, Jenny, the assistant superintendent patted me on the back and said, Grossenheimer, you're one of the fastest mail sorters this branch has had. Oh, Jenny, you should have heard how he said Grossenheimer. It rang out to the rooftop of the post office. My father and grandfather and his father before him must have heard it in heaven and said to each other, ah, another Grossenheimer has made good.
The career of Sigmund, the postal clerk, looked rosy. Much rosier than mine as a full-fledged young attorney starting out to practice law. I dusted off my desk, bought a Morris chair, a leather couch, and a cuspidor, hung out my shingle, Herman, Kappen, lawyer, and I waited for my first client. Nothing happened. I dusted the desk again, refilled the dried-out inkwell, and still nothing happened. I began to wish that I was back in the bustle of the post office. The quiet, day after day, was driving me into a state of panic. Supposing I never got a case, never got to court, never heard the tap of the judge's gavel. And then I heard it, the tapping on my front door.
Herman, I hope I have not disturbed you.
Oh, no, Sigmund. Matter of fact, I haven't been very busy.
I know, Jenny has told me.
What can I do for you?
I have a little proposition for you. Something you could do for me. A case.
Hmm?
It would make me very happy if you will take me on as your first client. Oh, as for the fees...
Sigmund Grossenheimer, what kind of a case could you possibly have for a lawyer? You don't want to buy the Brooklyn Bridge, do you? Or have you been caught robbing the mails?
Heavens forbid. I thought... And this time it was my own idea. Jenny said you would only laugh. She'd have no part of it. I thought back to the time when I first came to you and asked for your help. I said then that if you ever needed anything, I would try to get it for you. So I said to myself, Sigmund Grossenheimer, what greater need has a young lawyer just starting out than a case? And as soon as I had said Sigmund Grossenheimer, it came over like an inspiration. A perfect case. I didn't have to look further.
I'm afraid I've lost you somewhere, Sigmund.
A beautiful name. Grossenheimer. True. But such a long one to write on a check. Or a postal citation of merit. Or any day now. On a birth certificate, yeah? It would make me very proud if you would let me pay my debt of gratitude and be your first client.
Sigmund Grossenheimer, if I'm following you correctly, I won't allow such a thing.
A moment, Herman. You remember in the Talmud it says every man has three names. One his father and mother gave him, one others call him, and one he acquires himself. The name my parents gave me, Sigmund Grossenheimer, this has been my greatest treasure, but also my greatest source of vanity. Gross, this is the one Mr. Lefferts called me, an insult and a sneer. But Sigmund Grossen, this I am acquiring myself, and because it belongs to me alone, I have the right to give it, and to you, I give it for your first case, if you will have it.
I shall be honored, Sigmund Grossen.
I learned much from my teachers, more from my colleagues, and most from my pupils.
If I may take liberties with Judah Hanasi, I learned more from my pupil than he ever learned from me. The lessons I taught him were short-lived in the mind of Sigmund Grossen, but the lesson he taught me, that greatness lies in the little deeds of little men, this I have never forgotten.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Dr. Isaac Tobin, Executive Director of the American Association for Jewish Education. Dr. Tobin.
The preeminence of study and learning is so well established in the Jewish tradition as normally not to need restatement. But we are now living in an era in which the responsibilities of scholarship on all levels is demanding new appreciation. This is evident in the realm of technical achievement, where a premium has been placed on the production of more scientists for control of the space age. But it is especially true in the realm of the humanities, whose study will determine the role of man in relationship to himself, to others, and to the time in which he lives. The Jewish educational enterprise, from elementary through graduate level, is the largest single common undertaking of the total Jewish community. It involves more than 600,000 children, 17,000 full and part-time teachers, and an annual expenditure of well over $70 million a year. But it is beset by the same shortages that threaten the general educational structure of this country. There is not enough time for learning the things that need to be learned, and not enough teachers to teach what is to be taught, and not enough interest in the home or community to make education and learning the most attractive career in our lives. In America today, we face the specter of huge institutions, astronomic capital funds, but not enough qualified faculty with whom to staff these institutions. The cultural consequences of this educational underemployment will be measurable a generation from now in the intellectual bankruptcy of our people. I speak now not only of a Jewish bankruptcy, I speak now of an American bankruptcy. It is essential, therefore, that we restore that perspective which Jewish tradition uniquely has drawn for the role of learning. The Talmud describes those commandments whose fulfillment earns a man eternal reward, and concludes by saying that all of them together are to be equated with study. If our society and its values are to survive, men must return to this conviction.
Thank you, Dr. Tobin. Eternal Light drama today, The Inheritance, written by Harriet Kopp, was one program in this Eternal Light series dedicated to the ideals which govern the relationship between man and man. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Gerald Hyken played Sigmund Grossenheimer, Grossen. Julie Ozer was Jenny. Mandel Kramer played Coppin. Joe DeSantis played Leffert. And Santos Ortega was Judah Hanasi. Is Vic Roby. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.